This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
Okay, Energy Safety Canada, here we are once again. Finally. I told you it was going to take a hot moment before it actually happened. Josh and Brent, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. Thanks for having us, dude.
So you just you both just came off the stage. Now, I have to say this. You did tell me this from the very beginning, Josh, that you were going to carry 80% of the load. I might say 90. I mean, Brent, I'm not trying to insult you there, but you backed out.
It was his time to shine.
He was a big deal last year, man. He's so last year's news. It's 2023 is all about theory. 2024 is all about doing.
So how did the plan come together? I know that you guys did the book together, but how did the plan come up with, hey, we're going to split this slightly different? I know you guys were down in Wollongong back in February. Now we're here at Safety Energy Canada. And how did you decide on this is how we're going to do the overview?
Look, from my point of view, we wanted the hop into action is our big push. And the whole emphasis was, how do we get people to start doing, stop talking and start doing? And the best way of doing that was to bring Josh down. Because if Josh can do it, anyone can do it.
Oh, wow. Wow.
There was a vote of confidence inside of there.
To be honest, Jay, there's always, at these conferences, there is a lot of theory. And what I'm quite lucky about with Mitchell Services is that the organization is quite okay to share as much as we possibly can with industry if we can make industry better. We're not saying we've done it perfectly. But by actually showing some of the practical things that we've done, we wanted to give the room confidence that they could actually go back and try some of this stuff. And we really wanted to go, you know, oh, yeah, this is how we do it. It's like, let us show you how this works. Let us show you the mechanics, how a leader's involved, how a supervisor's involved, how is the field involved, like actually so they can live and breathe it in their own environment when they go back to work and go, yeah, I could actually make that work.
Okay, so let's backtrack a little bit and let's talk to some of the people that were potentially not there. So let's say you're listening to this. This is the first time that you've heard of this verbiage of 4Ds. Can you give kind of a brief overview for people to understand what exactly we're talking about?
Sure. So the 4Ds stands for dumb, dangerous, difficult, and different. And the 4Ds was that ability to gain insights from the front line. Now, Eric Honagel has talked a long time about, look into everyday normal work to understand, because in that everyday work, there are those weak signals, those things that become very apparent when something has gone wrong. But, of course, the issue was, how do you do that? And for us, the 4Ds was about using that power of storytelling from workers, and in those stories they shared with us basically were those weak signals. But at the same time, it was also to focus on the fact that workers are having to make do every day. You know, there's no such thing as perfect work. So the dumb, dangerous, difficult, and different is a way for them to share those stories and to share their stories through those different lenses that people have. So what you might think is dumb, Jay, and what you do, someone else actually may find that difficult.
So let me talk about this, because I want to have an understanding on how does this come about. So you go from a learning team's perspective. This is what you're focusing on. So how did he get you to the 4Ds?
Yeah, look, that's a really good story.
And how does Josh get involved in this whole mess too?
Well, he's a beta tester, basically. So one of the things that came out of a learning team was that once organizations started running learning teams, they were learning a lot. And you could engage with a work group every day and learn lots of things. But the organization is going to have finite resource. It's always going to have finite resource in terms of people. So what we were looking at is, how can we get the front line to have these conversations? And how could we then identify those weak signals, particularly where those weak signals are beginning to cluster together, and then run a learning team to get that deeper learning? And the reality has been that the majority of what workers share with us at the 4Ds, they actually drive that improvement within their own work groups. So the stuff that is left over is really what that learning team then gets dug into it. Because, you know, a learning team is about finding those systemic drivers.
So, Josh, how do you get to the beta test phase? How do you jump in? How does he hoodwink you into the whole thing?
Oh, look, we've been really proactive. Like, I guess when we've implemented the HOP principles into our leadership program and how our leaders operate, that was a proactive thing for us to do. We implemented critical risk management as well. That was a proactive thing for us to do. But what happened is we had an injury on one of our drill rigs. So Sebastian sustained a crush injury on one of our drill rigs and crushed a number of bones in his hands. And what that event learning taught us is that we weren't interested enough in normal work. And what was going to be a trigger? What's the method that we could use to actually bring that out? And the 4Ds just seemed a really simple thing to go, if we ask these types of questions, we're going to learn all these weak signals and we're going to learn where we do make things difficult for our people and where things don't make sense for our people. So it seemed like a really quick and easy thing. In my mindset, it just seemed a really simple thing to do. It was an interesting one, Jay, is that in the room where we've spoken at Energy Safety Canada, Brent asked the question, oh, who's heard of the 4Ds? And most of the room put their hand up. And then it was, oh, who's implemented it? And there wasn't as many people. There wasn't anywhere near that. I see the 4Ds as something very simple that a business can bring in, like, tomorrow. It's just changing your conversation and being genuinely interested when you ask those 4D questions.
So when your company decides, hey, we're going to move forward and do this, how quick is the turnaround? When do you go, okay, we heard this, we're going to beta test it. What are we talking? Are we talking
weeks? Weeks, days, usually days. How are we going to train it? What system are we going to use? We must use a current system. We don't want to make anything else. And then if we're going to make supervisors do it, what are we going to stop them doing to allow them to do this? So you've got to turn something off. Don't add more and more bureaucracy or, I guess, something that's going to take a time. So all we did with the 4Ds is take our current way that we were having conversations in the field and just change them to those 4D questions.
But as I looked at it and you were doing the presentation and you're doing the layout, you simplified exactly the breakdown step by step. I mean, you did these drone views of this is how we're doing it. And I mean, I don't want to say that you dumbed it down, but I felt like you dumbed it down to my level that I could understand exactly what was going on. And is that really how the process goes across the board?
Yeah, it's exactly like that. It is simple. It's the biggest thing with the 4Ds is how are you capturing the information and what are you going to do with that information? So we were quite overwhelmed when we first implemented it. We probably got 60 in our first month, so 60 4Ds come in, and it just was like, oh, holy crap, we had no idea we were doing these things or we were lacking here or that our people actually didn't know there were resources to help them with some of those things. So the board, we originally went to our board and said, look, we've got these 64 Ds. And they're like, no. We want to know about the themes. Tell us about the key themes that are coming out of the 4Ds and we'll more look at the systemic thing. And then the leadership team will look at the detail of the 4Ds and then we'll work with the local supervisors on actually like making those changes. The biggest thing with the 4Ds for me, Jay, is that you need to have that closed loop feedback. It's no point going out and having a conversation and taking these learnings from the 4Ds without going back and saying, hey, this is what we've done with that information, or, you know, thank you, I've actually learned something.
So let me ask something to you real quick, Brent. And Josh, I really do appreciate the information there. When somebody starts implementing this and all of a sudden you said 60 4Ds turned around. So right there. I would imagine that you're getting a phone call almost immediately of what have you decided to actually put us through? What kind of resources? Where do you tell them that they need to be looking at?
Yeah, look, that's a great point, Jay, because it's scary.
Right.
But I think it's scary for some interesting reasons. First of all, they're actually giving up control. So they're moving from that notion of telling, they're moving to a concept of listening. And listening can be scary because they feel they've lost control of the narrative. Mm-hmm. Through that process of listening, and we've created a concept, particularly for leaders, called listen, learn, then lead, because there is this notion or concept for businesses that if they learn about something, they feel they have to go and try and fix it. But of course, we know those fixes don't become sustainable. So what we try and do is we try and get them to hold back. Now, listen to what you're hearing. take some learning from what you're hearing, those themes that are emerging, and then lead with that learning. And that lead, so if I go back to it, a lot of the learnings that happen within the group get improved by the group. And this notion of self-improving teams is what Deming did in his work. But from an organisational perspective, they focus on those themes. Because they, like Todd talks about risk ebbs and flows, that's how the 4Ds works. So it's like a game of whack-a-mole. You know, you'll knock it down, the next stuff will come up. So you've got to breathe in, and we try and teach people how to breathe in, and then move on. And once that mental switch happens, then they start to see the 4Ds as a mechanism of driving operational change and operational excellence, not safety. It might start with safety, but it drives to operations.
So let's talk about that, and whoever wants to answer this, here's where I'd like to go. How do you all of a sudden then, I mean, and let's just go based on the title of your presentation, putting critical risk management and HOP into practice. How do you decide 4Ds is tying in directly into HOP principles?
Learning is vital. It's as simple as that.
He
right?
went straight to principle two. It's like, there's your answer.
Yeah. It's learning is vital, right? But what the other HOP principles allow you then to do is that if you're applying a 4D, you're going to hear news that you may not know or you may not want. So you're going to learn something. So that's where the other HOP principle of, you know, leaders' response matters is really important to support the 4D. So that's why we wove it in that way. 4Ds is a learning tool. And it's how leaders are going to respond to that learning.
So let me ask something. And if you want to jump in on that before I ask my question, do you want to add something to that,
Brian? I just want to add to it that the 4Ds is not about behavior.
Okay.
So blame fixes nothing. It's not focused on people. It's focused on the system. How is the system supporting me in my work? And when they share those stories, they're sharing all the rubs and frictions. So blame fixes nothing to me is paramount because we're focusing on work, conditions of work, not on the people performing the work.
And context drives behaviour.
Yeah.
So you're using the 4Ds to understand more and more context.
Context.
So during your presentation, you talked about the five principles, but then you added something in there. You knew I was going to get to this. I mean, let's not lie.
No.
Controversy.
Right.
So you go to a – are you calling it a principle?
Okay, as I said to the room, and I'll repeat it now, I am a HOP purist. Okay. There are five HOP principles.
Right, but it was part of the same wheel, so that's why I'm asking.
Yes, but for us, and I've talked to Rob Fisher about this, but critical risk management is actually woven, it's similar to the 4Ds, it's actually woven into the fabric of those five HOP principles, right? Critical risk management is part of that as well. But for us, because critical risk management was quite new to the organisation, we just wanted to highlight it that it actually supports HOP, like critical risk management supports HOP and HOP supports critical risk management. I always say that it's the lost sixth principle, but it's like the cousin's table at a wedding. Like you want it there, but it's in the back corner. So it's not one that we dominantly talk about, but because we're in a high-risk industry in mining, like we need to highlight how important critical controls and their effectiveness is in our operations.
So when you talk to Rob Fisher, and I know that Rob Fisher kind of changes it just slightly, and he talks about Arrow. So are you saying that this is the sixth principle for Arrow, or are you saying this is the sixth principle for HOP?
No, I'm not calling it the sixth principle.
Oh, you know, I'm so tagging you on this.
No,
I get to talk to the big man later, so that's
I know, and he'll blow up. And as I said, I'm a HOP purist, and I only teach the five principles. But we just talk about that control saves lives is really important in a high risk industry like ours.
No, and I'm just giving you a hard time.
You're doing it really well.
No, yeah. Because I know other organizations have a seventh principle and so on, and I think that it really you have to change things. You're going to always have the core, whatever the core principles are. In some industries, you have to tag additional things on. So that's the only reason I'm asking how you had it out there.
But the reality is, if we're trying to control energy, if we're trying to get people to fail safely, we are controlling energy.
Right.
So understanding how to manage that energy, either preventing it or mitigating it once it happens, that is HOP heritage. That's its heritage. You know, someone shared me the other day that they talk about control saves lives and also control saves loss, which goes back to the same thing. What they're saying is that if we encounter something and if something performs unexpectedly, the system is able to respond to it. And I think that's true within HOP, and it goes right back to the DOE handbooks, is that HOP came from high risk. It doesn't call out critical risk as a separate topic,
right?
Because that risk is normal. But for the general audience out there, that's not what they hear. They hear critical risk as a different subject matter.
Right. So you're mentioning this, and I'm going to mention a term that was mentioned yesterday during Decker's presentation where he talked about baby food. Because baby food is always referenced in regards to when you're talking about safety differently, and then you start talking about how Josh is over here smiling, so maybe we should start looking this direction. What's your general feeling about that? Do you look at these two things as safer things, safety differently, too hot, when you start talking about the baby food aspect of it? And do you feel that you're out there peddling baby food?
No, look, you know, I always credit safety differently for the start of our journey.
Okay.
So those, I said there was three principles when I taught, and then Decker goes, no, there's four, like, whatever. right? But when we first got taught safety differently, it was about, you know, it's not a bureaucratic responsibility, it's an ethical responsibility. It's not the absence of accidents, it's the presence of capacity and controls. And your workers are, you don't blame your workers, your workers are a solution. So the problem with that, Jay, is that when we implemented safety differently as a term within our organisation, our clients hated it because it was calling their baby ugly. You're saying, oh, well, this is safety differently, so it's different from ours. So you're saying yours is better than ours. And it's like, no. And but when we've come across HOP, HOP is not about the workers, it's for leaders. So we focused that HOP rollout like on leadership, so it didn't even have to involve our clients, it just involved our leaders, and that's what's worked for us.
Can I be controversial?
Go for the baby food thing too.
Yes. And by the way, we are the masters of baby food.
Okay.
Because baby food to me means that we're dishing something up, something that is nutritionally rich and easily digestible. Okay, so if that's the definition of baby food, we are the masters of baby food. The thing about here is that HOP has been influenced not only by safety differently, but also by safety too. If we go back to the heritage of black line, blue line, workers imagine, workers done, all those things come in. HOP allows us to operationalize this. Things like learning teams, things like the 4Ds are, if you want to call them tools, we call them, you know, freedom and a fray. But they're ways of operationalizing principles. And if that's what we need to do, and if that's deemed baby food, I'm okay. Because people have to start their journey. And as they go on their journey, they get more mature. And as they get more mature, they're more interested in looking out in that wider perspective. So we have always been very conscious about paying homage to where things come from. But asking someone for a leap of faith from one position to the next position is scary. So for us, for a human to walk, they have to crawl. They have to go from crawling and they have to keep evolving. That's our approach. We want to evolve.
What do you got, Josh? You didn't give the baby food answer.
I've got nothing. Like, I actually don't. Doesn't have, like, it's.
I don't think everybody has to like it.
No,
I mean,
it's funny, man. Like I shared this with the audience, and I always do. Like, the HOP principles mean so much to me. Like, personally, it's how I actually apply myself at work. It's how I apply myself at home. It's how when an event happens in our organisation, leaders' response matters. It keeps me in check almost. And like I said, the principle fundamental, like, you know, fundamentalist with the principles. I don't see it baby food, but it has to make a change on an individual. It's not a poster on a wall with the five principles and suddenly you're doing HOP. It has to mean something to you. Like, it actually has to mean something to you as the person who's going to roll it out and involve it in your organisation, because you will always come back to those five key principles.
But we've also heard the opposite end. We've also, you know, people talking about the Five Commandments, mm-hmm. like it's some sort of religion or cult.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because there was somebody who posted an article on LinkedIn yesterday, and I almost think that that's where you're going with this, that was talking about safety differently / hop being a cult. So, are you part of a cult?
No. Well, A, do cults get tax credits? And B, can we design a nice uniform? I mean, robes. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, each of us got into this for a different reason. But what is consistent is that we got into it because we wanted to do better. And for me, the principles are those underlying things that we live by. And as we develop and grow what we do, we go back and ask the question, is what we're doing meeting those principles? It is not a religion. I can share with the audience, I have no tattoos, no ink.
Hey,
on hot.
I'm going to take that personally.
I was going to say, okay. Stephen Harvey always says, why put a sticker on a Ferrari? I go, please.
Okay, because, yeah, so I think there's a difference between its popularity is being driven and people's response is going to vary. So once again, true hop nature, whoever expresses a view about the commandments is expressing their view. Therefore, context drives behaviour. If they understood the context of it, who knows, they might drive a different behaviour.
Yeah, Jay, like a cult, people with similar beliefs. Yeah, cool. It's making a difference to the people who work in my business, so therefore I find it's a good thing. So,
Well, I mean, you brought up a story, and I'll go back to when we were in Wollongong, and you just briefly talked about it a few moments ago. You had the gentleman that got severely injured that was at your work site. And when I hear people reference of cult or whatever they want to deem it, you're putting these things into practice. I mean, Brent and I get to look at things differently. Brent gets to see fatalities. I get to see other people talk about this stuff, and I get to hear about them putting it into practice. I'm there for the aha moments. I'm not there so much as they're putting it into full motion. You're able to see it in that particular matter. So as you go through that whole process and you bring in somebody new, and all of a sudden they're going through, here's the hop process, here's the 4Ds, and you're seeing that their eyes are expanding, they're being able to gain this information. Do you look at it and go, they're on the right track, or do you have questions about some of the things that are being developed or how this whole process is done?
I actually don't know how to answer that, Jay. Rephrase the question for me.
So, you see it in practice.
Yep.
Do you think the stuff that you're doing as an organization, when somebody's brand new walking into your organization, is the right path for them to be down? Because, I mean, not everything that we do is perfect. That's
No. All I was going to say is, like, that's why we share, is because this is what works for us. This is what works in the way that our people communicate, you know, the relationships we have with each other, you know, the things we do work really, really well for us. But we own another drilling company. So Mitchell Services owns Deep Core Drilling. When they've had new HSE people come in from a very compliance background, and I sit them down and explain the HOP principles, it can be quite challenging. It really can. But, I mean, all I put to them is that if there's an event investigation, is digging a bit deeper into those counterfactuals, like, oh, well, they just didn't do this. Okay, what were the conditions to lead them to do that then? So I just apply it that way, Jay, just asking a few deeper questions and really, like, quite protective of the workforce as well and those involved in events.
Okay, very good. Let me ask another oddball question because, you know, we are among friends here. Yesterday we were almost presented with a challenge. We were presented with a challenge of safety management systems. We were presented with a challenge of ISO 45001. He didn't say 45003. I'm talking about Decker's presentation in particular. And he kind of talked about how safety management systems are not the greatest thing for organizations to have. Really what it would boil down to. So as you look at this and you're going out there and you're being able to give information to people, share information with people, how do you look at this? when the whole safety management system comes up and they go 4Ds and HOP, how does it tie into what you're going out there talking about?
I don't have a problem. I mean, the core principle, and you know, once again, I sat on an adoption committee of ISO 45001. ISO talks about the whole notion around continuous improvement as looking for opportunities for improvement, and that those opportunities should come from the front line. Everything we do meets that criteria. In actual fact, sitting here with Josh, Josh's organization is ISO certified.
Yep.
Okay, with HOP. And like all these things, ISO is just the standard. Okay, and it's basically saying this is what we want. It doesn't describe the how component. So the fact is, some people get triggered, you're not calling them investigations.
Right.
Okay? But if you look at what ISO is asking for, it's basically saying when something has been, you know, unexpected, we want you to go back and learn. We want you to go back, and they still use the word root cause, but let's face it, that means systemic. They want you to find the systemic drivers in that and create change. That's what a learning team does.
Josh, what do you got?
Nothing.
So let me ask you a totally off the wall question, and it's kind of funny that Amy's walking up at the same time that I'm about to ask this. What do you think about this venue? I mean, this is year two for me and Brent. This is your first year. I have to tell you, I've been super impressed with Energy Safety Canada, what the stuff that they're doing, what they're bringing forward into the industry, and where they're hosting this thing. Oh, my God. Yeah. I've never seen anything like this.
It's a horrible occasion.
Oh, yeah, stay away. Please stay away. Yeah. Look, I got given a lot of crap this week. This is only the second time I've ever seen snow in my life, like actually snowing. And so Brent took a few photos of me actually doing a snow angel, which was like friggin' hilarious, right? But what I like about Energy Safety Canada is they're being proactive about who they're bringing in to speak to their audience and trying to make it a mixture of here's theory, here's something that can lift your organisation, here's a practitioner. You know, or like it's a really good mix. And the HOP language doesn't seem new to the audience. Like they're very familiar with it because Energy Safety Canada has been, you know, quite purposeful on who they've brought in over the last couple of years. So, it's amazing. Like they've done, it's an amazing. I can't believe there's 900-odd people here. Like, it's crazy.
And I look at it and I go, and if you think about how it's laid out throughout the country, where the different industries are investing into this to make Energy Safety Canada what they are, where they go, okay, well, we're having this problem. Can you send someone? Because, I mean, they're essentially already, I mean, based on what Gordon was telling me when he was interviewed, that they're already kind of bankrolling the whole thing for Energy Safety Canada. So they're already investing into the organization in regards to being able to help out. So I look at it and I go, it's just mesmerizing. I mean, I look at why are other countries not picking the same stuff up?
Well, look, it's interesting because, you know, they're an employer advocate group.
Correct.
And they're not shying away from compliance. But they're also saying that things like HOP helps us to do better. And I think that's really important because, you know, operationalizing, good operations drive good outcomes. So I take my hat off because Energy Safety Canada at the end of the day, it's not so much leading. They're willing to show people the real ways of doing things, not just the theory. And this morning, you know, I joked, and it's probably more than a joke, that, you know, we don't hold an academic PhD, but our PhD is in being practical, helpful dudes. And I think we're at that stage with HOP that we need to stop talking about the what and the why and start focusing on the how and the when.
Yeah, what I like with Energy Safety Canada, Jay, is that the resources that they have online, I've used them in Australia on the other side of the planet. So there's a short video they've done. I think it's for about 9 minutes, and it actually shows it's a cartoon, but it's a practical application of the HOP principles. I've used that in my training. Like, you know, the resources that they've put together over the years is just amazing.
I've been super impressed. I keep on looking around. I haven't found anybody else like them in regards of what they do. And what they do at this venue out here, the amount of people they bring in. And let's be realistic. We're kind of far from society.
yeah, this is Hogwarts.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I thought when I got here.
And because it's just the three of us talking, we're working with them and developing a little five-minute video on the 4Ds because we want to extend that reach. But, of course, that's just between the three of us.
Right. Nobody's listening. So, gentlemen, if people want to find out more about what you both are doing, where can they find out more information?
In our case, learningteamscommunity.com. Once again, our website, we share lots of information. The 4Ds is completely free for people to use. All we ask is basically attribution, acknowledge where it came from. No derivative means don't change it. And non-commercial, which means don't sell it.
Yeah. Easiest way to get me is on LinkedIn, to be honest. If you just reach out via LinkedIn, just send me a LinkedIn message or connect. So easy. I'm just Josh Bryant, and I work for a company called Mutual Services.
So is the profile picture going to be your snow angel picture? That'll be the easiest way to find you.
It may be.
Well, gentlemen, I do appreciate the time.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, Jay.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.